Chapter 3. All cats love jam, all boys love camp. At 6:05, a bell started ringing somewhere on the camp, picked up and broadcast into the cabins by the loudspeaker system. Mike sat up with a jerk, before fumbling desperately for his watch on the small table between his and Rudy's beds. Crap, we still have to get changed before dinner. Rudy lay unmoving on his bed, gazing up at the ceiling. I hate bells, he said, his voice as expressionless as ever. I also hate the food at camp. He rolled over to face Mike. Do you think anybody would notice if I didn't go to dinner? Mike started to tug his shirt over his head, responding in a rather muffled voice. Notice if THE Rudy Miller has come to dinner or not? Probably. Besides, after the way you behaved at the introductory meeting, I think John is going to be watching for us. Me? Said Rudy, his voice slightly affronted. You were the one who kept kicking me. Mike rolled his eyes and rifled through his bag for a clean shirt. Just get ready, will you? Rudy rolled off the bed and started unbuckling his belt. What's on the menu for this evening, other than the slop they'll claim as food? Mike sat down on the bed, running his fingers quickly through his hair in lieu of finding his comb. Dinner with special guest and welcome speeches, he read from the program, stapled to the front of his orientation pack. Rudy paused in the process of unfolding a clean pair of pants. Mike tried not to look at the knee support bandage breaking up the smooth curve of muscle on his left leg. Speeches, Rudy said monotonously. Mike shuddered. It could be worse. On Friday we have a campfire with marshmallows and song. Rudy sighed. At least we have time to brush up on our rain dances before then. They were the last to arrive at the mess hall, and Mike immediately noticed that all the other camp counselors, save one, were wearing their Camp Algonquian uniforms. Only Sam, currently isolated at the far end of the long table laid for dinner, was still in regular clothes. He looked miserable. Mike slid into the seat next to him, while Rudy sat down opposite. Crap, Mike said, softly. I guess the uniform wasn't really optional. Sam sighed. I guess not. He smiled weakly at Mike, his eyes flitting nervously to Rudy, who was ostentatiously polishing his fork on his T-shirt. The other counselors were laughing and talking like old friends. Mike decided to make an effort. Which cabin are you in? 17, replied Sam gloomily. I'm the specialist arts and crafts counselor, so I have to share. Mike tried to remember who the counselor in charge of 17 was. You're with, Bob, Sam replied, looking even more depressed. He's the one with all the black belts. He spent the last hour setting up his weights in our room. I already stubbed my toe twice on his dumbbells. They all looked at the table at Bob. Bob looked back at them. Mike averted his eyes hurriedly and picked up a bread roll from the basket in the middle of the table. Is it true that you're an Olympic runner? Sam asked Rudy, reaching for a roll. Before he could stop himself, Mike's foot made contact with Sam's ankle. Ow! Sam cried out, startled. He dropped the roll he was holding into the water jug. What did you kick me for? Rudy raised an eyebrow. He has an uncontrollable urge to injure his dinner companions. He sighed in a put-upon manner, and fished the bread roll out of the water jug with his fork. I've become accustomed to the blackened bruises that mark my shins after only a few days of sitting with him. Sam blinked and shifted unsubtly away from Mike. Mike felt the flush start at his chin and creep up towards his eyebrows. I didn't. I don't. My foot slipped. Before Rudy could make his next, no doubt even more outrageous, remark, John stood up and cleared his throat noisily. Quiet down for a minute, guys. The noise died away. Welcome to Camp Algonquian Island, the best place to work in Ontario, John said, beaming. The clones all cheered. Sam, Rudy, and Mike remained silent. Tonight is just a relaxed get-together before we get stuck into the hard work of getting ready for the influx of campers in 2 days. Tomorrow, we concentrate on some of the bigger jobs that will need to be done before kids and parents arrive on the weekend. The following day, we'll be working on getting to know and trust one another as we start out on a great season of friendship and fun. Mike looked over at Rudy, seeing the shade of horror that passed over his normally expressionless face. Later tonight, our special guest this evening will address us. But for now, let's enjoy our meals." The clones all cheered again, and there was a surge of bodies towards the serving counter, where two cooks in white uniforms were standing ready with trays. As they queued up, Mike and Rudy slotting into the back of the line, they overheard Chuck asking about his history at the camp. 3 years as a camper," John replied, his tone pleasantly reminiscent. "Best days of my life. I only missed 1 year, when me and my sister and brother all got whooping cough. I begged and begged even to come for just the last week, but the doctor said I was still contagious." Chuck made a sort of wordless, sympathetic noise. "From what I hear, though," John continued, accepting a plate of stew from the kitchen staff, "I didn't miss much. There was some kid here, a real brat, who ruined everyone's summer. That was the year of the flood, when they rebuilt all the cabins, except 13, which wasn't too badly damaged. People were still talking about that kid a year later. He was apparently some kind of great athlete, won us loads of trophies, but just the most obnoxious kid you can imagine. Almost none of the counselors that year came back to work here again." Mike's hands were so tightly wrapped around his tray, he was losing feeling in his fingers. He couldn't look at Rudy. He couldn't look at anyone. He bit down hard on his lower lip and shuffled a little closer to Rudy. "What is this?" Rudy was inquiring in a tone of mild curiosity, as the kitchen server handed him a plate. "I don't like to eat things I can't identify without an encyclopedia." "Shut up," Mike hissed at him, accepting a plate from the frowning kitchen staff with a rather weak smile. "Didn't you hear John just now?" Rudy picked up a bowl of blue jello with a sigh. "As a point of principle, I never listen to twits." Mike grabbed his own dessert and hustled Rudy back towards their table, prodding him with the edge of his tray. Rudy went along with him, but as they sat down next to Sam remarked, "Really, Webster, I thought we'd worked on controlling your violent impulses." Sam, who seemed to have cheered up a little at the thought of food, flinched away from Mike again. Mike rolled his eyes. "He's kidding, Sam." Sam eyed Rudy warily and smoothed down his mustache. "If you say so." For a few moments, they all concentrated on eating. At the end of the table, the clones were bellowing at one another in some jocular discussion of sports teams' loyalties. "So, you guys been friends for a while, then," said Sam. "Did you go to high school together or something?" "Or something," agreed Rudy, blandly, holding up a forkful of his stew and examining it minutely. Mike briefly thought about kicking him again, but decided against the scene and probable alienation of Sam that would follow. We went to summer camp together 1 year and got to be friends. Turned out we didn't live too far away from one another, so we hung out sometimes over the next few years." "Oh," said Sam. "You didn't go back to camp?" Mike eyed Rudy nervously across the table. I went to day camp at home the next couple of summers. Rudy, my parents were too busy dealing with my little brother's newly revealed criminal tendencies to think about sending me to camp," Rudy interrupted smoothly. Mike said nothing. Rudy had spent the following summers running, always either on the road to attend race meetings or training with his coach. "In fact," Rudy continued, "until they dropped the bombshell that Mike and I were coming to work here, I don't think my parents ever mentioned camp again." Sam nodded gloomily. "My parents made me do this, too. My dad said I couldn't spend all summer painting." Rudy scooped up the last of his jello from the bowl. "Well, cheer up. You get to spend the summer warping young minds instead. I'm sure that's an even trade." Before Sam could respond to this, John stood up at the head of the table, clapping his hands to get everyone's attention. Rudy put down his bowl of jello and picked up Mike's. "You think he'd do that if he knew how much it made him look like a performing seal?" As the clones quieted, Rudy's last few words were clearly audible to John, who frowned at Rudy, blandly eating dessert, and Mike, who was hiding behind his napkin, stifling laughter. Clearing his throat importantly, John began, "Ahem! As you may know, the owner of the camp and grandson of the founder, Elias Warden III, unfortunately suffered a stroke over the winter. Although he's mostly better now, he won't be taking an active role in running the camp, and so in addition to being head counselor this year, I will be the acting manager of Camp Algonquin Island. However, Mr. Warden wanted to come to talk to you this evening and welcome you to camp." The door to the mess hall opened. Mike craned his neck to see Elias Warden totter uncertainly into the room, leaning heavily on a cane. He had dismissed his vague memory of Mr. Warden as typical teenage exaggeration, but faced with the reality, he was forced to conclude that Mr. Warden was exactly as bandy-legged as Mike's memory had suggested. Bravely, he met Rudy's eye over the dinner table. Rudy merely looked imperturbably back at him. "Gentlemen," said Mr. Warden in a quavering voice, "welcome to Camp Algonquin Island, the best place to come to camp in all of North America." He paused. "My grandfather, Elias Warden I, founded this camp 36 years ago to give young men an opportunity to enjoy the great outdoors and good, healthful sporting activities." The clones all broke into applause at this. Mike tuned out as Mr. Warden droned on for a while about the history of the camp and his own glorious career as a counselor working for his father. As Mr. Warden's tone changed, suggesting the end of the speech was near, he started to pay attention again. "It's up to you all to make sure that these boys have a wonderful, safe, happy month here at Camp Algonquin. Never forget, my grandfather started this camp in the sure and certain knowledge that just like all cats love jam, all boys love camp." He paused expectantly, obviously anticipating applause. The room remained silent, the clones wearing matching expressions of bewilderment. Mike bit down hard on his lower lip. "Milk, sir," said John, leaning in to speak to Mr. Warden. "Milk? Why would I want milk?" Mr. Warden asked belligerently. "They all love milk." John looked slightly embarrassed. Mike choked, trying to repress his laughter. "Boys don't like milk," exclaimed Mr. Warden, frowning at John. "Can't abide the stuff myself." Unable to restrain himself, Mike started to giggle, desperately trying to muffle the sound in his napkin. As soon as he started, Sam, who had been in equally dire straits beside him, broke out in peals of laughter, followed by first one and then all of the clones, despite John's desperate gesticulating behind Mr. Warden. Only Rudy remained calm, finally setting down his jello to applaud politely, his expression wholly indifferent to the hysteria around him. Mr. Borden beamed at them all impartially, delighted by the response of his employees. Turning, he asked John to assist him back to the dock, as he wanted to return to the mainland before darkness fell. His hand solicitously under Mr. Borden's elbow, John turned at the door and barked out, "Be here for breakfast at 7, men," before letting the mess hall door bang behind him. "Didn't there be jam with our toast?" Rudy asked blandly, and Mike, who had finally stopped laughing, gasped and laid his head down on the table. Chapter 4. Nothing good can come of a group sing-along. By the evening of the following day, Mike was no longer laughing. He collapsed onto his bed in their room, groaning. Rudy, his limp a little more pronounced after their long day, sat on the edge of his own bed. "I'm not being paid enough for this," said Mike, his arm pressed against his eyes. "No one could ever pay me enough for this," Rudy responded. Mike heard the mattress on Rudy's bed compress as Rudy lay down, and then the thump of shoes hitting the floor. They sighed, virtually in unison. Mike reflected, a little meanly, that Rudy really had nothing to complain about. He had managed to evade the worst of the chores through a combination of simple refusal, "I don't scrub, sweep, or mow," and a letter from his doctor, produced at exactly the right moment. The contents of the letter remained a mystery to Mike, but apparently excused Rudy, and, by extension, Mike, from all the most onerous duties of set-up day. While the other counselors toted heavy objects, cleaned, polished, and swept for the morning, Mike and Rudy had only had to set up the computer room and get their cabin ready. Even then, Mike had done most of the work, while Rudy looked on, claiming to be supervising. The afternoon had consisted of a series of stultifying lectures about safety, a first aid refresher, and reviews of the camp curriculum. Mike had barely managed to stay awake in the stuffy, cramped room, and Rudy hadn't even tried, apparently nodding off during the lengthy discussion of the round-robin football tournament with several other boys' camps nearby. Mike heard Rudy sit up, and rolled over onto his side to see his friend unwind his support bandage from his knee. Underneath were two small, neat scars, still slightly red and new. Rudy began to gently massage his leg. Noticing Mike watching him, he said abruptly, "What delights are in store for us tomorrow?" Mike picked up the orientation pack from the night table between their beds. "A day of fun and team-building," he read, grimacing. Dinner at the usual time, then. Oh, Lord, a campfire and songs in the evening. Nothing good can come of a group sing-along, Rudy predicted. Unless it maddens the local wildlife sufficiently that they stampede and trample all the clones to death. Mike chuckled tiredly. I'm going to bed. Rudy nodded and began rewrapping his knee. Another early start tomorrow. I'm sure they'll want to pack as much mandatory fun into the day as humanly possible. Glumly, Mike looked at his schedule. Probably. Sure enough, the bell rang to warn them about breakfast at the hideous hour of 6 in the morning. Wandering blearily into the mess hall, Mike sat down opposite Sam and smiled a greeting. No Rudy? Asked Sam, surprised. Mike blinked. He'll be here in a minute. Why? Sam poked at a pile of scrambled eggs on his plate dubiously. I'd just never seen you without him. Mike paused, his knife hovering over a piece of toast. Well, we're friends, he said lamely. Everyone else here is too sporty for me. I'm not, Sam pointed out mildly. Miller is pretty sporty, too. I checked him out on the internet last night. He is the guy Chuck mentioned, the Olympic runner. He ate a forkful of eggs. Or he would have been, except for this thing with his knee. So you can't say that you're not friendly with sporty guys. He looked curiously at Mike. Mike said nothing, just ate toast with fierce concentration until Rudy came in. Morning, Rudy said to Sam. I see you risking the eggs. Very brave. Hey! Everyone in the room jumped. A white-coated kitchen worker pointed a large knife at Rudy. I told you once already. Unconcernedly, Rudy picked up the other half of Mike's toast and began to eat it. Mike rolled his eyes and reached out for another slice. What? He said to Sam, noticing the other counselor watching them. Oh, nothing, said Sam airily. Just... He was interrupted by a sudden thud and rattle of dishes as Chuck the football guy settled his not inconsiderable bulk on the bench next to Rudy. So, Miller, he boomed jovially, I'm picking my team for the activity today. Wanna join us? He waved a meaty hand towards three other clones who were loitering a few feet away. Rudy swiveled in his seat to look at them, then turned back. Do you have room for Mike? He asked pleasantly. Chuck seemed taken aback. No, it's usually just 4 or 5 people in a team. He bared his teeth at Mike in what Mike assumed was supposed to be a grin. I'm sure Webster won't mind. He and, Art Boy here can be in a team. One of the other clones snorted a laugh. Rudy raised an eyebrow. No, I don't think so. Calmly, he stole another piece of toast from Mike, stood up, and headed towards the door. Excuse me, he said to Bob, who was blocking out the daylight in the doorway. Silently, Bob moved out of his way. Back at the table, Chuck was glowering at Mike and Sam. What are you? He asked Mike, sneering. His girlfriend? Just then the bell rang, and the obnoxiously cheery voice of John the head clone came over the loudspeaker. Let's get the day started. Assemble at the campfire, please. There was a surge of clones towards the door, hooting and cheering, Chuck among them. Mike picked up his last piece of toast and stuffed it in his mouth, wiping his hands on his jeans as he stood up. Come on, he said to Sam, we're missing out on all the fun. At the campfire, they went over to join Rudy, who was eyeing proceedings with a cynical eye. We're choosing teams, Rudy told them, his voice unspeakably bored. Apparently they want us to play games. Mike looked over at the assembled clones, mostly huddled in bunches of 4 or 5. Do we need some more people? Rudy surveyed the crowd. I prefer to think of them as throwbacks to Cro-Magnon Man rather than people, he said casually, then waved a hand at Bob, Sam's roommate, who was standing around looking confused. What are you doing? Whispered Sam sharply. He hates me. He barely ever even speaks to me, and I share a cabin with him. He's probably shy, said Rudy calmly, or perhaps he didn't notice you were there. Besides, it's always useful to have some brute strength on your side. Bob lumbered over to them. You're fourth, he mumbled, looking uncertain. Mike nodded. Do you know what we're doing? Bob just shrugged. John raised his megaphone to his mouth. Let's get started! For those of you new to Camp Algonquian, we counselors always start the year with some games to build trust, friendship, and team spirit in our little group. There were cheers. John raised his hand for silence. I see you've all chosen teams. Let's start with our traditional first activity, the Trust Fall! John gestured at a wide tree stump, perhaps 3 feet in height, towards the edge of the clearing. I'll go first. Moving over to the tree stump, he gestured at the team standing closest to him and clambered up onto the stump. Stepping up to the edge, he waited while the team linked hands and allowed himself to drop into their waiting arms. There were more cheers as he came safely to his feet. "Who wants to go first?" he shouted. Immediately, teams began to clamor for the opportunity to throw themselves off the tree stump. Rudy sat down. "I don't fall," Rudy said when Sam asked him what he was doing. "What do you mean you don't fall?" asked John, aghast, overhearing him. "You have to! How else are you going to build trust with your teammates?" Rudy looked at Mike, Sam, and Bob. "Can I trust you guys?" he asked, blandly. "Sure," said Mike, sitting down next to him. Sam and Bob nodded doubtfully. Rudy turned back to John. "I choose to show my trust by not doubting them. It's merely coincidental that this way I don't have to jump off a perfectly good tree stump and make them catch me." John spluttered. "But team spirit," he said, a little desperately. "Yay, go us," said Rudy. He waved a fist in a vaguely celebratory manner. Mike snorted with laughter. Fortunately, before John could round on him, there was an outburst of cheers and laughter at the tree stump. John left to see what the holdup was. Nick was standing on the edge of the tree stump, apparently wavering. "But I'm heavy," he was saying. "Are you sure you guys can catch me? I wrestle as a mid-heavyweight, you know." "Nick doesn't seem very trusting," Rooney remarked. "Perhaps we should set the stump on fire. Force the issue." Bob wordlessly dug in his pockets and handed Rudy a pack of matches. Sam started to laugh. Over at the stump, Nick continued to hesitate, but then turned around, ready to fall. "Look, beavers!" Rudy yelled suddenly, his voice astonishingly loud compared to his usual soft tones. The group of clones waiting to catch Nick turned to look, just as Nick let himself drop off the stump. There was a loud thump and a groan. "Oh no, sorry, my mistake," Rudy called over to them, as they assisted Nick to rise from his pained sprawl on the ground. "It was just a really big bird." "Perhaps today will be fun after all," said Rudy placidly, watching Nick limp towards a picnic table. Mike gave up the unequal battle against hysteria. After the campfire and the dreadful attempt at singing, two verses of Kumbaya, one verse of Juice Room that somebody started just much too high, Mike decided to take a shower. Rubbing shampoo in his hair, he reviewed the day mentally. Rudy had evaded every game, as usual, and they had spent a long, allegedly fun-filled day in blissful inactivity, mocking the clones. Mike grinned in recollection of some of Rudy's more outrageous remarks. The door to the shower block opened. "I can't believe you keep trying to be friends with Miller," a voice said. Mike recognized it as Chris, the camp swimming coach and Cabin 1 counselor. "He's famous," retorted Chuck. "Plus, I called my cousin. Apparently there's some big mystery over how he wrecked his knee. He said if I could find out, he knows a guy who'll pay me the big bucks to tell the press." "He spends all his time with Webster," said a third voice, one that Mike placed vaguely as Ralph Richardson, the Cabin 4 counselor, with his pathetic little crush on Miller. Mike blinked, swallowed, and ducked his head under the shower spray, not wanting to hear any more. By the time he reemerged, the shower block door was slamming behind the speakers. Mike dried off quickly, pulled on some clothes, and stepped out of the shower cubicle. Bob was standing brushing his teeth at the sink in the room. "Hey," said Mike, grimacing, "have been here long?" Bob shrugged, spat in the sink, and rinsed his toothbrush. He patted Mike on the arm as he left. Mike stared at himself in the mirror for a few moments before reaching for a towel and rubbing furiously at his wet hair. When Mike walked back into their room in Cabin 13, Rudy was already in, or rather on, his bed, stripped to his boxers and his knee support bandage on top of the sheets, the orange bedspread folded neatly at his feet. His eyes were closed. Thinking he might be sleeping, Mike closed the door quietly behind him and moved towards his bed, his arms full of his towels and his soap bag. "If you're planning to seduce me, by the way, now would be your best chance. After this, it will become exponentially more difficult, what with the hordes of small, obnoxious boys arriving in the morning." Rudy's voice was as calm and uninflected as ever. In shock, Mike dropped all of his belongings with a sharp clatter. Dropping to his knees, he tried to pick up his scattered toiletries with nerveless hands, stuttering all the while, I haven't, what? He said, his voice regrettably squeaky and bewildered. Rudy, his eyes closed, hummed contemplatively. "You mean you aren't in the mood for love? We've had dinner, or an approximation anyway, and moonlight, and though I wouldn't normally dignify it with that name myself, music, I'm pretty sure that the next step is romance. Mike heard himself gobble something incoherent in response. Rudy sighed. Oh, well, he said. I suppose I was right then. Nothing good ever does come of a group sing-along. With that, he subsided, leaving Mike, shell-shocked and confused, standing in the middle of the room holding his shampoo bottle. Rudy didn't stir as he fumbled with his soap kit and struggled out of the jeans he'd pulled on to walk back from the showers. About to pull his shirt off, Mike felt suddenly horribly exposed, and pausing, glanced over at Rudy. Rudy's eyes were closed, and his mouth very slightly open, and he was breathing quietly in and out in the unmistakable pattern of sleep. He entirely failed to look young, sweet, innocent, or any of the other things Mike had heard sleepers called before. Groaning inwardly, Mike yanked his shirt over his head, snapped off the overhead light, and threw himself onto his bed. After only a couple of minutes, he opened his eyes and glared up at the ceiling, his thoughts chasing around his head. Had Rudy been serious? Was it just a joke? What did Rudy think, or know, or think he knew, about Mike? He rolled over and buried his face in the thin pillow provided by the camp. He wasn't going to think about it, he decided. He would just tell Rudy in the morning that it wasn't funny saying things like that, and then they would forget all about it. He thumped his pillow to try and soften it up a little, and was still trying to stop listening to Rudy breathing when he fell asleep.